This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Bryant Lee from Atlassian.
Hi, my name is Bryant. I head up our partnerships and integrations team here at Atlassian. We focus on bringing a lot of best of breed software together and tying in with the Atlassian stack from Jira to Confluence, Trello, and now Jira Ops.
You've grown massively over the last year as a company. That's brought a lot more smaller partners in. It's given the bigger partners lots more things to write for. How do you balance your ecosystem to stop it being dominated by big companies and give those little partners a chance?
Now, it's always about, and for us, how we build software, it's always about what the customers need. A big thing that we are starting to focus when we were a small company, it was a lot easier. Everyone had access to all the different product managers and engineers and even Scott and Mike, right? But as we've grown over time, as our product portfolio has grown larger and larger, there's definitely difficulties in doing that and making sure everyone stays on top of what the market and what our customers need. But I think that's something that we are continuing to invest in. Our community, as you know, is very vibrant and just very vocal and always looking for more insights in terms of what we're seeing in the market and what our customers are seeing. And that's something that we'll continue to do. We are, of course, working with a lot of the larger partners like Slack, Facebook, Microsoft, Amazon, and the like. But as we start to look into the future of work, and I think you saw some of what Scott was talking about, there's big companies, but every team has different ways of working. What we do is we actually just work with all the different customers. We actually just understand from them what their big pain points are. And some of those are big problems, like how do I tie my chat services together and how can I manage my notifications? But some of it can be very simple workflow type things, or some of it can be like, I just need these types of reports, richer reports from Jira we're not getting. And so what we try to do is make sure that as we start to work with these both large and smaller vendors, what are those insights? What are the customers looking for? And be able to give them that feedback. We'll start to give that out in things like summits as well as Atlas camps as we start to have our keynotes. Here are some opportunities. But the other thing that I think we're starting to do is actually give more insights to where we are going. Jira Ops is a good example where we see IT as something that we want to double down on. We wanted to say, hey, our first take at this is really around looking at incidents and making sure we can understand what's going on and how do we drive them to resolution and learn from those. Now, well, I think we think there's a huge opportunity for a broader ecosystem to be shown to grow up there. Now it'll be, let's get some early access, let's get some customer feedback, and we want to share that to our community so that they can say, oh, I hear that from customers as well. I hear where the gaps are. Let me go fill in those gaps. We then go work with them to say, hey, what are the APIs you need? And we actively work with them to make sure that we do that. We are not perfect by any means in terms of being able to talk to everyone, but we're going to do our best, and we want to make sure in our previous conversations, ecosystem is a core part. Scott and Mike believe this from top on down. Our products were built with an ecosystem from day one, and we'll continue to invest very heavily in that.
One of the challenges of managing an ecosystem is many of those partners will be small companies. There'll be somebody who's got a single idea about a single thing they need, and they'll write a solution to it. They'll find an opportunity to put it in the marketplace, but over time, they lose interest, or they move on, or they've got other things they need to do. There's a danger here in that some customers may find that, use that, and it becomes central to their business. But because it doesn't get updated as you move your main products forwards, it becomes a blocker to customers moving forward. How much monitoring do you do to identify those products that haven't been updated for a period of time, investigate why, and then look to help customers who might be stuck on an older release of Jira or Confluence, for example?
As the marketplace continues to grow, I mean, I think at this point there's over 4,000 apps, both paid and free, and that it's definitely a challenge. One of the things that we do is we continue to look at marketplace as a way for us to gather some of that feedback and hear from customers around, this needs updating, why hasn't this been updated, here's some new features I need. We hear from that on that side. Obviously, a lot of the developers are very, well, we work with them, we get the feedback from them in the community, and they reach out to us directly. But one of the areas that we look at and hearing from developers in terms of where the gaps are is things like Ecosystem Council, where we actually go talk to them. We talk to a subset, both large and small, to say, hey, what are the blockers that you're hearing about? And what do we need to do to help solve that? What we'll then do is in those Ecosystem Council meetings, we'll have product managers, we'll have engineers, people from the product teams to hear the feedback from the ecosystem. And then that will help us fold into our roadmap in terms of what are the things that we can do to solve. For us, it's a multi-point. We try to take feedback from different areas. And then from there, we start to kind of iterate on it based on what we can commit to.
You made every plugin partner's nightmare decision recently. You dropped two big products. HipChat in particular, very large product, lots of plugins, lots of people using it. And you made the decision that when HipChat and Stride went, you go with Slack as the partner. That disruption for many of those plugin vendors would have been a case of, hang on, we have a business model, we have a revenue stream. Well, first of all, how do we survive where we are? And then how do we move over to the Slack ecosystem? And what do you then do to support us? How will you take them through that journey?
For us, it's very much like they wanted to also, where is customers, are they getting the value that they need, and what are the gaps that they need that help fill? What we'll always do, and this was something that we chatted about with Slack from the early days, is how do we make sure that that experience, both from a customer point of view, as well as a developer point of view, is addressed from day one. We not only have a very robust migration plan working with the Slack team on migrating customers over, but for instance, Bear Douglas, who heads up Slack Developer Relations, she's here. They'll talk to the developers around, here's how you migrate over to the Slack platform, here's what's capable. We are taking a very deliberate approach in understanding kind of what those use cases are. We also did a lot early on to reach out to those partners as we were going through this, give them the rationale. A lot of them had been working in the Slack ecosystem and the like. They were familiar with it, but we wanted to make sure that they understood how we were going to migrate customers over, how we were making sure that from a business perspective, there's still opportunity, that we're still investing. It doesn't mean we don't believe in chat. It's just that from a customer point of view and how people interact with our products and how chat and chat products together, there's just going to be a different dynamic. So for us, it was just more prioritization and making sure that we were doing what's right for the customer. We took a big bet with Stride, and we still have that vision of bringing all teams together, and we'll continue to invest in it. But the market has changed a lot over the past few years with entrants like Slack, like Microsoft Teams and Google Hangouts and such. Just based on where we were, the things that we wanted to invest in, like IT, as you saw earlier today, we just thought that the best path forward and the best experience forward was to have a partnership with Slack, and that's been going great so far.
You also have multiple product streams. So you have standalone, you have data center, and you have cloud. Importantly, cloud has a whole different architecture. That means different APIs, different levels of access that your app can do inside. It's a multi-tenant world, therefore things have to be restricted. When you sit down and you talk to partners, how many of them are looking at addressing the established market plus cloud? How many of them only want to be cloud players? And how many of them are now just a little confused as to where they should be?
It's a good question, and we hear it from both sides, and we see it from all angles. We talk to developers who are starting off in cloud and want to focus on cloud. 80% of our new business comes in for our cloud products first nowadays. We see a subset of developers are there. But we work with a lot of enterprise companies and a lot of enterprise developers that their bread and butter are servicing the global Fortune 500. Their needs are going to be very different. And the types of APIs, the access they need is going to be very different. We see a hybrid world where people need that. There's a journey from on-prem. We obviously, as a company, believe that cloud is the way of the future, but it'll take a while to get there. When we work with developers, we see a lot of them maybe starting off in cloud and then also wanting to support server, just in terms of the ability to iterate and ship quickly and get feedback very quickly on the cloud side. But we also see a lot of developers saying, hey, you know what? Our bread and butter is the server. We want to make sure our server customers are served well. And so they're going to prioritize that first. We don't choose. We want to do what's best for the customer. We want to make sure our customers are served. From a support perspective and how we engage developers, that's why you see things like the data center programs, that we want to make sure that as our customers move into, let's say, a data center type of solution, whether it's managing on their own or on AWS or Azure, they're there along the way and making sure that security perspective and performance is there. You see that investment happening on the server side of the world and the on-prem side of the world. But on the cloud side, new frameworks, new ways to integrate with our new products is continuing to, you see a lot of the investments being made there as well.
The program to look at the DC apps, certify them, and make sure that they're more stable came about because of some issues that you were facing. When you look at cloud, are you going to now deploy a similar style program? Because one of the things that, if we look at other vendors' programs, has done incredibly well is where the vendor steps in, creates a certified program. But more importantly, that program helps those partners as well, because customers will come to them first before they'll take other applications around. The challenge is, where do you set the bar for entry into the program? If it's set too high, they don't want to play. If it's set too low, you're probably not getting the quality you want within the program, and you're spending a lot of time cleaning up.
Yep. It's a learning process for us, but I think one thing above all is that we take security very, very seriously. You can't compromise on things like security. That's why we wanted to make sure, based on the feedback we're getting from the customers, if we're going to go get data center, we need all these apps. We need these apps to be certified, support multi-tenant, and be able to scale with us as we scale our business. As we start to scale our cloud, as you heard, we're moving that restriction from 2,000 to 5,000. They're going to start to run into those. They're going to have the same questions around the apps, their security, their ability to scale. We will take those same learnings. And you have things like Atlassian Access that was recently launched, which allows you to manage all your cloud versions, all your instances of all the Atlassian cloud products that you have. but security being a key piece of that. That is something that we're going to take and learn from what we've done with the data center side and take that to the cloud. It just depends on our customer journey and how they're moving. Cloud migration, as you know, is we're still early in our thinking there, but we're investing a lot to make sure that the customer experience is as streamlined as possible.
One of the big news announcements was the acquisition of Opsgenie. At the same time as you launched Jira Ops, the two sit nicely together. They've both got a long journey to go on to fill some big boots and to move up in the enterprise. How often do you look at your ecosystem and your own product roadmap and make that decision that it's going to cost us X to write this and then we have to stabilize, test, put it out there and build a customer base, but actually it might cost us a little bit more to buy this other company, but they work with us, they're a partner, and we can quickly bring those customers into the fold?
We believe in general in how we approach products. We just want to do what's right for the customer. We obviously acquired Opsgenie and we're very excited to welcome them to the family. But as a part of Jira Ops, we know that there are other tools that people use as well. So you saw PagerDuty, XMatters being a part of that launch. From a chat perspective, the Slack, but we'll support other chat platforms as well. For a lot of us, it's keying off of what, as we started doing our research, as we started talking to customers and what solutions they needed, or the capabilities that they needed to come out of the box, or what were they looking for. That's how we start to look at how we want to build this product and what are the areas that we want to invest in. At the core of what we believe in and what we want to focus on is collaboration and communication. But there's certain things that we're not going to get to investing in or we don't invest in, let's say, today. Maybe we'll invest in tomorrow, but just based on that, comes back to your earlier question. What are the opportunities for ecosystem? We'll get feedback from customers and we'll want to share that with the rest of the ecosystem to say, hey, from Jira Ops perspective, maybe something like analytics and BI that people want to just rifle through and be able to do a lot more heavy querying around the data and the performance. Maybe that's something that we want to go talk to the ecosystem team about and the rest of the broader ecosystem around, hey, there's an opportunity here. We very much look at, okay, where are the areas that we want to invest in, which is always around content and collaboration and communication. As we start to expand our portfolio, that may increase. But for us, we always think about ecosystem from the start in terms of how we want to build our products and how we want to extend our products. We saw that with Jira Ops and launching with partners come day one. Case in point, earlier last year, it was Bitbucket Pipelines when we launched. We launched with a couple dozen different partners that were allowed to extend, and you can actually have different services that you can call out to from day one as well.
There's always a fear amongst partners when they see the vendor who they're writing for start to pick up some of their competitors. The message that they think they see is that, oh, that will now give preferential treatment. We compete with what was another plugin. That will get pushed harder than we get pushed. How do you convince them that this isn't about cutting them out, that this is just about a piece of technology that you now want to bring in core, but actually customers will be free to choose any of those partners they want. The same is true of the Slack decision. There'll be other products out there that people will want to choose, and they won't want to feel they're being pushed down a specific line.
I hope I'm not sounding repetitive, but I feel like I am. But a lot of it just has to do with the feedback we get from customers. It's just what our customers asking for, what they're looking for. Sometimes they may say, hey, this is great, but I need something that does this. I need something that does that. And so we may need to offer more choices. When we did research, here are the three that we saw that people were asking for from day one, but we'll maybe expand on based on what we see. But for us, it's just really around getting early feedback, seeing how people are using it, making sure the use cases and the problems that they're trying to solve are being solved, and making sure we're doubling down investments on those side.
I'm happy with the customer perspective. It's the perspective of the partners, these people who've invested heavily to write plugins, who see you acquire a competitor and think, what does this mean for us? That's a different thing to what the customers think. So how are you calming them and how are you persuading them that this isn't about eating their market, but actually it should hopefully expand their market?
That's exactly the piece is just around we're trying to grow the product. And based on this, there's maybe certain investments that we need to make that may be sometimes competitive, but there's just so much opportunity and there's so much work that needs to be done. And I think it's making sure we're bringing our partners along for that ride and giving them insight into our roadmap. Again, we try to do what we can. We want to do more and we are going to do more. It really is around getting that feedback and making sure that as we look at the new areas that we want to invest, here's another opportunity. Here's what we want to do next. Here's where we're going. How do you want to make that investment? And we'll work with them. Sometimes they come to us with ideas and we say, hey, that's a great idea. This is kind of how we're thinking about it. Maybe not a great idea. Or maybe we just want to make sure we're clear on what you want to build and what we're going to build. And other times we'll say, hey, this is just something that we're not going to do. We had an analogy a while back when ecosystems is tricky. It's like soccer and kids. When you're young and you're just starting out, everyone's gathering around the ball and everyone's trying to go kick the ball and trying to move it upfield. But as you get older, I was very lucky I got to go see a Barcelona game. Everyone just knows where they need to be. There's a strategy involved. Like, I'm going to take care of that area of the field. I'm going to take care of that area of the field. Things may change. The ball may move in different directions. But overall, okay, this is what we need to do to win. We can use that same approach with how we want to manage the ecosystem. It's like, hey, this is where the ball is right now, or here's some opportunities right now. But there are other areas that we need to get to and we want to get to. Here is what we can do together to make that happen. The thing that we want to do is just make sure we're open with our communication. And you heard Jay and Robert and Mike and Scott have always said how important being open is as a team. And we will do the same thing with our ecosystem as well.
You put an awful lot back into those partners. Your program is nowhere near as punitive as some other people's programs when they're working with partners. How much has gone back to partners financially so far?
To date, we're actually really excited to say that there's over $500 million in lifetime sales since we started the marketplace back in 2012. Just in FY18, there was over $200 million. So we're seeing that escalation and that growth between the marketplace, and that's, again, across the 4,000 apps that we're seeing right now. If I get the stat right, there's over 65 vendors that have over $1 million in lifetime sales as well. It's a very important thing that we want to continue to stoke and make sure that they see that opportunity, they're able to grow with us. If anything else, we're going after bigger and larger markets, doubling down in IT where we haven't played before. We want to bring our ecosystem with us to do that. We can't do it alone, and we know we can't do it alone. That's one of the things that we'll continue to focus on with the rest of the team.
You use the analogy of sport. I'm a sports coach, and there's a distinct difference when you work with a small team compared to teams that have been around for a long time. When we look at where you are with your products and your partners, what is it you're looking for? What areas are you waiting for them to step in? Is it things like AI and machine learning?
That's a great question. Every single product team will be like, talk about this, talk about this, talk about this. There's so many different areas. It depends on the customers that we serve and what we're looking at with software teams, and what we're looking at with Bitbucket and Jira is really around the unit of work. How do we make sure that we're getting the right insights into our platform? How do we make sure our platform is communicating with other third-party platforms to make sure that the teams have the ability to move work forward, whether it's on the operations side and customer tickets coming in to market insights, maybe marketing tools, to A/B tests you may want to run using a different third-party tool. On the Jira Ops side, as you know, we're just getting started. We see a lot of great partnerships we have on the incident management side, but we have chat as well that we want to continue to invest in. And you can imagine the knowledge base side of it, and you saw the preview or learnings from post-incident reviews. There's more that we can do on that side to kind of make sure. And how do we get additional feedback from social? Or how do we get additional feedback from customer support type tools like Zendesk? From a platform side, things like all the different collaboration and communication platforms out there in the world. We're going to work with Slack. Zoom's up there as well. We see a lot of attraction, BlueJeans and such. How do we make sure it's as easy as possible for teams to communicate? How we integrate with them will be a key part of that future and what we want to do.
One of the things Scott talked about was democratizing corporate philanthropy. It's easy to say when you're a very large multi-billion pound business. It's not so easy when you're a small to mid-sized partner. And there may be partners out there who felt that they are being put under pressure to join Pledge 1% or to do things. How do you convince them that, firstly, this isn't about pressure to do this, but secondly, provide an environment where actually they want to make those contributions?
I can't speak for Scott and the rest of the executive team, but from my perspective, it's just about culture. It's what you believe in. Just that with that open culture and what's wanting to do good and move the world forward. We talk about getting teams to unleashing the power of every team. There are teams, there are personal teams, there are professional teams, and family is a team as well. I've worked with a bunch of different nonprofits as well. I think for us, we just want to make sure that we're doing everything that we can. We are proud. We leave the world a better place in terms of the products that we build, as well as being people. That's just something that we believe in at our core. We're by no means forcing other vendors and partners and companies to pledge, but we see a lot of demand for it, and we see a lot of people wanting to participate, and so we'll continue to grow in that. It's a huge part, and this is something that's very, very important for us, and we'll continue to invest in that.
I think leaving the world a better place is a great aspiration for any company. Brian, thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much, Ian.